The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
I put the question out on Twitter. Why is Conor McGregor cancelling interviews such as the one he was due to do in Jonathan Ross on ITV tomorrow night in advance of the release of the documentary movie on his life next Wednesday? Susan Daly, the editor of the journal.ie, is one of those joining us to talk about the week trending. You've been following the story today. What's going on?
Yeah, I have indeed. Conor McGregor's documentary, kind of an observational doc, is due out next week. Really large release for an Irish made documentary. It's going to be in over 500 screens worldwide. So should be a lot of publicity about it. Conor McGregor, who is rarely out of the news, I suppose, and most recently was in it last weekend for less positive reasons, was due to be on the publicity trail. He was due to do a two-day junket in the UK. He was going to hit a load of major publications, including a pre-record for the Jonathan Ross show, because they do pre-records. All of those were cancelled. Now, one of those was going to be the cover of a Sunday magazine, so that's obviously not something that can be repeated. I suppose one of the reasons I know quite a bit about it is because there were a range of major Irish publications, including our own, who were also lined up and had been confirmed to have interviews with Len McGregor next week, and those have been cancelled, and we've been offered a spot on the red carpet instead. So not as much FaceTime with Conor McGregor, although he will be doing pre-record with the Late Late, which on Tuesday, which will be
on next Friday.
On Friday, and he'll be doing a live interview at the actual premiere on Wednesday.
Okay, listener says, I'll put this one to you, Ian Power, Executive Director of Spunout.ie. I guess because everyone will ask him why he used homophobic slurs, and he'll have no answer other than the fact he is homophobic. Now, is that a bit strong? Because he was somebody who did tweet in support of the marriage equality referendum as well in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, much has been played up of his support for the marriage equality referendum in the last week since it has been going around on Twitter, the video of him using derogatory homophobic language in describing one of the opponents of one of his friends. You know, for me, I don't think he was that visible during the marriage equality campaign. I think you had to dig fairly deeply to find stuff where he was coming out in support of it. And I think you only have to look at the fact that we've heard nothing from him. He now appears to be dodging media so that he's not asked questions about it. And also, you know, his followers and his fans have been, you know, in the comments sections of all media reports around this, you know, defending the language that he used, which I don't think is a good thing. I think it's, you know, we did send that statement 2 years ago where we said that, you know, we feel that our LGBT family and friends are the same as everybody else, but we still have a long way to go, and particularly in schools where Conor McGregor is an idol for lots of young boys. And for me, I think it's unacceptable that he would use that language, because those boys are the ones that are looking up to him.
Well, some people are saying, oh well, he wasn't to know that he was being filmed, and they're blaming the people who filmed what he said and for distributing it. Michael Cogley from the Ireland edition of the Times, he used the word faggot on a number of occasions. Has there been any statement from him since, any apology?
No, there's been no apology from McGregor's camp thus far. And to be fair, there's been a track record of very serious comments like this in the past, especially during the build-up to the Mayweather fight as well. There were some racial slurs that went back and forth that he did ultimately apologise for, but he seems questionably silent on this one for some reason.
So what's going to happen next week, do you reckon, Susan? Because he will be asked. Now, he may not be asked about it, ironically.
I don't know if he will be asked at those interview. Live interviews. Yeah.
Well, at the live interview, where is it on? Where has the movie been launched?
It's in the Savoy Cinema.
Which, so about 1,000 people at that event?
Yeah, it should be. And that is going to be broadcast, though. It's part of kind of a marquee event where it'll be broadcast to 250 cinemas, the interview followed by the documentary. One would imagine that that's going to be well sort of looked after in advance and so on. It'll have to be timed very well. So I'd imagine perhaps there'll be some visibility on the questions there.
But what about Ryan Tuberty in Tuesday's pre-recorded interview?
That would be entirely up to Ryan Tuberty, and there'll be a lot of pressure on him, I suppose, to tackle this question, seeing as none of the rest of us will be able to do it. I mean, I believe there'll be one or two other outlets have been chosen to come. Now, I will actually say that I was told by ITV, who I was speaking to today, about the Jonathan Ross show, that they were told that he was sick, and that's why he couldn't attend the pre-record this week. But it appears that, I mean, they seem to be, they didn't tell us that he was going to be sick on Tuesday, and there's something else going ahead on Tuesday, so the illness doesn't necessarily cover all of the non-appearances.
I think it's really important, Matt, that next week when Ryan Tubridy does sit down with McGregor, that there's no preconditions with his team, that he's not allowed to be asked about the incident, and that, you know, if that is the case, that RT refused the interview. I think it's really important that people in the public eye who use language like this are called out on it and have to explain themselves.
Okay, on Twitter, somebody who just calls himself Chris, and under the subject, the McGregor era, says, "You're like a dog with a bone when it comes to McGregor for some reason, Matt. It's sad." Someone's giving him a free pass, perhaps. Michael Cogley, let's move on. Fascinating story from Italy involving two football teams and the decision by the Italian giants Lazio of Rome to wear pictures of Anne Frank on their shirts. Why?
This is in reaction to some fairly heavy anti-Semitic actions from the Lazio fans, and it was, I think, the week previous they were playing Roma at home, and they put pictures of Anne Frank on the away fan seats all across the entire away section. I think it's to do with their believing that it's a derogatory term to call someone Jewish, and therefore associating the away fans as kind of an intimidatory practice. But what Lazio have come out and said is that have done already is that they've made their players go out and warm up with Anne Frank on their shirts before a game against Bologna on Wednesday.
And how have the fans reacted to this? Because there is this belief that some Lazio fans are quite fascist in their approach and anti-Semitic, and take this because the fact that Roma, the rival club, was set up by a man from the Jewish faith.
Yeah, well, it's not just, to be fair to Lazio, and there's not a lot you can say about their fans in this situation, but there's the idea of racism and anti-Semitism in Italian football is quite prolific. I mean, in the past we've seen instances with Mario Balotelli, with Sully Montari as well, who were both subject to racial abuse. And I think even Kevin Prince-Boateng also ended up leaving Milan as a result of it. And so they've got a long way to go to really rein it in. And FIFA, when you see before the Champions League games start, there's those videos of Ronaldo and Neymar and Messi kind of all saying the same thing, no to racism. But the Italian league certainly seems to be slipping behind the rest of us.
This is a fascinating story, and I wonder how many people actually of modern generation know who Anne Frank is.
I know, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people were doing a lot of Googling during the week when they saw this story come up. What was interesting on Wednesday night was the reaction of fans. I mean, the team went out warming up with the t-shirts that said no to fascism on them, and there was an excerpt from Anne Frank's diary read out as well in the middle circle. But actually some fans, now not all, and it was reported that the majority of fans, you know, respectfully observed what was happening, but some fans were making fascist salutes, were chanting that we don't care, and apparently similarly at other Serie A games as well, the same thing happened. So, I mean, to be commendable to the club, they have, you know, taken action. They've not denied that, you know, or tried to play it down in any way. They've organised for 200 of their fans to go to Auschwitz on kind of an educational tour, and I think the league itself has trying to step up to its responsibility. So it's up to the fans to change their approach.
And of course, the problem is that the people who most need the re-education are the ones less likely to be taking a seat on that particular bus, one would imagine. Isn't it just so extraordinary, though, where we use the phrase never again about things that happen within our lifetime that are reprehensible, that we go, this is going in the history books. Like this, the Holocaust and, you know, the treatment of Jewish people and other people caught up in the Holocaust, it's so fresh in a lot of people's memories, we think. But the fact that it could be misappropriated in this way, and that even people who aren't anti-Semitic have to be re-educated about why stickers of Anne Frank is a problem on these seats, actually shows that we do forget. We have a very short memory as people, and it goes back to, and you know, any sort of slurs or that we were talking about a little earlier in this. There is no such thing as leaving off on somebody or letting something go, because sadly, when you let go, people forget and things become normalised and okay.
Susan Daly, as editor of the journal.ie, tell us about who this Labour MP Jared O'Mara is and why he's in so much trouble.
Well, he's an absolute class act, and he's of the parish Sheffield Hallam.
The sarcasm of that.
No, big fan, yeah. Of parish of Sheffield Hallam, in not familiar to myself.
He took Nick Clegg's seat, didn't he? The former British Deputy Prime Minister.
That's correct. So already kind of in under the spotlight. But he'd gotten in trouble for online remarks that he'd made in 2002 and 2004 between that time, and he'd apologised them, and that they were kind of misogynistic and homophobic and so on. But more recently then, it's come to light that he had a run-in with Sophie Evans, who told BBC's Daily Politics that she'd met him on a dating app and there'd be no hard feelings if things didn't work out, but that in an incident in March, he was DJing in a nightclub and made comments to her that she said were aren't broadcastable, calling her an, I hate to say it, the ugly bitch. Okay, and this kind of stuff. And he's saying now that he categorically denies it, but the Labour Party have said, now we're suspending you.
Yeah, because the Guido Fawkes website, I think, has managed to find quite a few things from his past.
Yeah, and this is what makes the case so much worse, is the length of time that this has gone on. So that instance was 2014 that you mentioned there, whereas this is back when he was 24, he's 32 now, so we're talking about 12 years ago. So again, I don't really particularly want to say the stuff they say, but again, some very derogatory slurs on a post about a review of an Arctic Monkeys album.
About the females in the audience, essentially.
And about, I suppose, his feelings towards them. And as you can imagine, they're not in the best light. But I think, to be honest, this story is made by the fact that he was on the Women and Equalities Committee, which he has since stepped down from. I mean, that is just ludicrous, the fact that he was in that position in the first place. But it certainly seems now that Labour has his back up against the wall.
Well, indeed. And let's hear what the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, had to say about him.
All of us in this house... should have due care and attention to the way in which we refer to other people and should show women in public life the respect that they deserve.
Ian Power, what's your take on this guy?
Well, I mean, I think if you were to go on the 2002 to 2004 comments alone, you could say that, okay, he was young and maybe he had some learning left to do. But I think what you see here is the track record and, you know, things as recent as March of this year. People do have to be held accountable, and we will definitely get hit, and particularly probably on your texts and Twitter, calling out what about free speech. Well, actually, there is a law against hate speech and a hate speech against minority groups, and the groups we've been talking about so far in the programme, you know, you're talking about LGBT, you're talking about Jewish people, you're talking about women. So, I mean, I think really this kind of issue that people seem to have with being, you know, the PC brigade, or as it's called, seem to lose sight of the fact that actually we're not being PC, we're actually calling out what is not supposed to happen in a civilised society.
Tell us, Susan, about Saudi Arabia's planned new supercity.
Well, after all this, I think I might have to move there just to get away from all this thrown around as slurs and whatnot.
The modern Western world is very civilised, as you know.
It is, absolutely. But really, would you want to live in Saudi Arabia's new super city, which is going to be called, I don't know if this is an acronym actually, I did mean to check, but it's all caps anyway, NEOM. NEOM. It sounds like a different language, doesn't it? I mean, as in out of this world language. City of the future. It's a strategy plan to reduce the country's dependence on oil, right? It's going to span more than 10,000 square miles. Think about that. That's not a new city. That's a planet, lads, okay? And it's going to extend across the borders of Egypt and Jordanian, which I'm like, hold on, how's this not part of an invasion? But it's a special economic zone, is really the way they're phrasing it. It's going to have all mod cons, as they would say, but not as you know it, Joseph. They're going to be solars and drones, and everything's going to be automated. It'll be kind of Google car related and so on. Anyone who's read the Dave Eggers book I was mentioning earlier to Matt, Hologram for the King, might look at this as a slightly cautionary press release from Saudi Arabia, because it's going to be incredibly highly sterile, controlled environment. And then you wonder, well, do you want to be within the walls of that city? And also, what happens to you if you're outside the walls of those cities? I find it slightly dystopian, to be perfectly honest.
A listener taking issue with you, Mighty Mac. Since when are women a minority? Could swear there are more women than men on the planet.
Absolutely, and I misspoke there when I said that. Absolutely, but in terms of a group who need to be supported more and not as denigrated as the two stories we're about to talk about show.
Well, indeed. Well, actually, Michael Cogley from the Times Ireland edition, tell us about former President George H.W. Bush, the elder Bush.
Yeah, the 93-year-old wheelchair bound George Bush has recently been accused of two instances of sexual assault by two actors. Both have occurred in similar fashions, where they allege that he groped either actress during a photo shoot with a couple of other people involved. And then his spokesman came out and they said that President Bush would never under any circumstance intentionally cause anyone distress, and he most sincerely apologise if his attempt at humour was offended.
Yeah, the attempt at humour, I mean, he goes on about the famous magician David Copperfield, and he calls himself David Copperfield.
Yeah.
which was
while copying a feel,
which suggests he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
Like the spokesperson also said, to try to put people at ease, the president routinely tells the same joke, and on occasion he has patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner. Some have seen it as innocent, and others clearly view it as appropriate. I mean, talk about stating the bleeding obvious, but I mean to come out and, you know, absolutely say it in those terms, I think is illustrative that he doesn't actually see a problem with this.
But Susan, do you get a free pass if you're 93 years of age in a wheelchair?
Well, he must have thought that you do. But I mean, he's also the former president of the United States, formerly the most powerful man in the world. He's not a man who hasn't come up against many diplomatic situations where he knows what's an appropriate way to behave. So the fact that he just feels licensed to because he's at waist level and that's where his hand manages to land, it's absolutely outrageous. It is outrageous. It's kind of funny when you tell the joke that he told, but it's actually not. Like, this guy is meant to be the pinnacle of civilization. Well, you know, compared to his son anyway. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that, you know, he's another part
of,
like,
it's not like Donald
Trump.
There's
a woman's body. I can do
it. But it's not like Donald Trump boasting about sexually assaulting women.
No.
But it's exactly as public, though. And it's exactly coming from the same mind frame of, you know, would he do it to a man, guys? Can I just always bring you back to that? He wouldn't. Remember, there's a famous, or not a famous, but there's an episode of Friends. Friends is lessons for life, guys, right? Go back to an episode of Friends where Chandler Bing's boss goes around whacking him on the ass every time he tells a joke, and Chandler Bing and punctuates it with a whack on the arse. And the whole time it's like the conversation is that this is deeply inappropriate and makes him very uncomfortable, and he has to resolve the situation by the end of the programme. And it's like, well, it stood out and became like a centre of a programme because it was happening to a guy. You know?
But clearly from the spokesperson, he doesn't seem to see a problem with it. And also the actress Heather Lind, who was the first person to come out and talk about this, said that when it happened, George Bush Senior's wife just kind of rolled her eyes and kind of as if to say, oh, George is at it again. So it seems to me that the people around him don't hold this behaviour as unacceptable, and it's not going to stop until they do.
That'll be George Bush. Okay, now then there's another case, Terry Richardson.
Terry Richardson, yes, indeed. He's a very unusual man altogether with some of the allegations that are coming out. He's a fashion brand photographer for the most part, and a raft of fashion magazines and brands as well have dropped him, subject to allegations of inappropriate sexual behaviour stretching back over the last two decades. Now, he's meant to be one of the most successful photographers in the world, and his style is meant to be highly sexualized. And some of the more unusual elements is that he can end up in the photographs himself with the model, but his range of work
are sort of stripping off with the models to put them more at ease, allegedly.
Exactly, yeah. So some of the cases that have come through are very strange, where he's asked for oral sex to be performed on him, but he's always maintained that it's been consensual throughout. A fashion commentator, Karen Franklin, who obviously I would know and totally up to date on, she mentioned that in fashion, people like Richardson who hold these powerful positions have up until now been seen as untouchable, and whatever they need to make happen in a pursuit of art, in inverted commas, and whoever they need to exploit is just part of the business.
Well, it's been the casting coach and so much of Hollywood and fashion and everything for many, many years. Look, at the time we've left to us, I want to ask you, please, Susan Daly, would you trust your front door to Amazon?
No.
Explain the story about how is this going to work?
Amazon Key, right, it's a new service. We've all had the frustration of not being in and trying to figure out when somebody's coming with a package and all that kind of jazz, especially if you work outside the home. You know, we're not around during the time when people are delivering. So Amazon launched Prime there about 12 years ago, which is a big thing in the US in particular, entitled members to free two-day shipping. So there's been loads of deliveries being made. Now they're talking about a service called Amazon Key, which relies on sort of the Internet of Things, right, which is where a lot of your home and other services are automated, so that, you know, you can put the heating on when you're on the way home in the bus and that kind of thing. I would say just put the thing on in the morning on the timer, but there you go, I'm old fashioned. Amazon's
that
new
was
cloud,
you know, the height of cutting edge technology when you first learned how to do that.
Well, I can tell you, when we got rid of the immersion and got a timer, my whole world changed.
Well, in defense of technology, it's very difficult to maneuver around those old heating devices now, and trying to set timers and everything, you have buttons everywhere. It's a lot more straightforward than an app.
Right, so we're not saying. So basically we're not the target audience for Amazon Key, which is going to use Amazon's new cloud cam, because all of these things have to have fancy names and a compatible portable smart lock. And so it would be operated by a barcode. So if anyone's ever used Parcel Motel and that kind of thing, which, by the way, doesn't allow people into your home, you know, it would be a similar thing that the courier would
be
able to drop.
Have you used that,
or
is that a bit too high-tech for you as well?
I've used Parcel Motel.
You're getting
very dare you. You do realise I work in the online world there, Matt. I'm not a complete Luddite, right? But the system works with locks from Yale and Kwikset, which are two well-known brands. And it is meant to be so policed that you know exactly when the courier was there, when they're coming, they drop it inside the door. My thing would not necessarily be the occasional petty theft from a courier. It is around more and more making your home hackable. You know, we yes. use online for banking. We use it for so many things now. I managed to leave my wallet in work, actually, overnight last night, and I didn't realise it was missing until I got a taxi home late last night and I hadn't hailed in my taxi. All throughout the rest of the day, I had ordered my lunch online. I had, you know, just used it in different ways that I hadn't ever touched a piece of cash. And I'm not Queen Elizabeth II.
Okay, very briefly, each of you lads, would you use Amazon Key?
Absolutely not. I think they have the right idea in the lockers and put that outside your house like a postbox and then use the key that way. That seems to be the obvious solution rather than letting a stranger into the house that works for a delivery or courier company.
You mightn't have a big enough locker box. You might be living in an apartment, Ian.
I'm not as clever to have thought of that. That's actually like a really good idea. But also, presumably you can switch this thing off so that when you're at home, you can be safe and secure knowing that nobody's going to be able to hack in or kind of get in. And so I'd be kind of okay as long as you could switch it off when you were actually at home, and so that you were kind of doubly secure that you were locked into your house and you were safe.
What if someone switches it back on from the
remotely
dark web?
And then the kids and all the rest of it. We got to leave it there. Ian Power from spunout.ie, Michael Cogley from the Times Ireland edition, Susan Daly, editor of the journal.ie, thank you all very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.